Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Is hearing loss affecting your job performance, your ability to get a job, or your personal relationships? Well, studies reveal that people with untreated hearing loss are twice as likely to be out of a job as people who use hearing aids. Now, my guest today is going to enlighten us on a lot of these issues. He's Dr. Ken Henry. He's an audiologist, and he's the director of the Professional Hearing Services in Falls Church. Ken, Dr. Henry, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley.
This is a fascinating subject. I know a lot of people, and as the population ages, we're seeing more and more people with hearing issues, some of it minor, some of it severe. So I'd like for us to try to cover the whole waterfront here and talk about, let's first start out with the people who are experiencing age-related kind of hearing losses. Now, do you see this? Is this a typical kind of progression of age, or is it genetic, or what are some of the factors that go into our losing ability to hear as we age?
Well, there's a multitude of factors, Shirley, that give rise to hearing loss. Perhaps the most common one is age-related hearing loss, but we tend to categorize hearing loss to sort of three different categories. The category of acquired hearing loss, and this is the childhood hearing loss that's developed at birth or shortly after birth or in childhood. Then there's the acquired hearing loss and a category called sudden sensory neural hearing loss, which is a sudden hearing loss secondary to usually infection or trauma or issues pertaining to the immune system. And then finally, this last category, which aging falls into, is the progressive category.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing loss progressively is typically associated with age, but there are other causes of that as well.
Sure, and we're going to talk about some of those causes, such as exposure to loud music.
Indeed.
Right, okay. Well, let's just look at the person who's experiencing some hearing loss. Now, what was interesting to me is, and I don't know how about the severity of the hearing loss that was referred to in the study, but about the fact that people with hearing loss are twice as likely to be out of a job. That seems to me to suggest that there's a whole lot of reasons why we need to do something about it if we're, in fact, losing our ability to hear. People, what are some of the clues? Is it that you don't understand what somebody asks you? Is it not being able to hear somebody in a loud restaurant? Or what are some of the keys?
Okay, well, first of all, Shirley, the study that you mentioned actually is a study that refers to people that have very significant hearing loss. The more likely classification is what we call people who are underemployed as a result of more mild or moderate hearing loss, and that's a much larger population. And what happens in this particular population is the person is perceived as either socially or intellectually not with it, for lack of a better term, and as a consequence of that, there's a perception on the part of the employer that this person doesn't deserve the salary that he otherwise might deserve.
So that can be a serious issue then in terms of your underemployment.
Indeed.
So you need to address this issue. All right. So the person thinks that they're suffering from hearing loss. You go to an audiologist. I'm sure you're going to subject them to a whole battery of tests and then make a decision about treatment. What are some of the likely treatments for people with hearing loss? Is it most always a hearing aid?
No, but the vast preponderance indeed are assistive listening devices. 90% to 95% of the folks that we see are folks that indeed will ultimately need hearing instruments. 5% or 5% to 10% need medical management, either for a neoplasm, a tumor, or some kind of medical condition or an ear infection. So the vast preponderance of folks that come to us for hearing problems are folks that ultimately will end up needing assistance with a hearing aid.
Okay. Now, let's follow that a step further. I have friends who wear hearing aids, I don't know anybody who's really satisfied with their hearing aids. What are some of the issues that consumers face when they are using hearing aids? And is it misfits or is it just a product of the hearing aid? I mean, they talk about background noises, for example. How do you address those issues in your patients?
Well, first of all, we could spend the entire rest of the segment talking about this very question. There's a number of different reasons that give rise to that common complaint of, well, it doesn't work very well. First of all, one has to understand that a hearing instrument does not correct the hearing loss in the same way that a refraction or eyeglasses might correct a visual problem. With hearing loss, there's a certain degree of distortion. And as audiologists, one of the things that we do is we measure this amount of distortion in speech understanding. If there is a great deal of speech distortion, then the hearing aids are going to be a great deal of help, but they'll never be able to overcome that speech distortion. So it's sort of
you have to make up your mind that it's going to help but not cure.
Indeed. That's a good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. Help it but not cure. And I think, of course, that is what people, perhaps they have higher expectations from hearing device assistance than is realistic. But I do know that my friends tell me that in private conversations and conversations in places that aren't very noisy, that these devices assist greatly. Now, we had one friend who because of his experience in war, had suffered a rather profound hearing loss. And there was a device that he took with him to restaurants and put on the table that seemed to help. What is this?
Okay, well, first of all, let me address technology in general and then specifically talk to you about the device that he has. This issue with background noise is one that the manufacturers and researchers have been addressing for years and years and years. One of the ways that the newer technology address that is by the use of noise processing algorithms in the computer in the hearing aid. Everyone has to remember that the processing speed of some of these very small devices is faster, or at least as fast, as a modern-day laptop computer. They're capable of doing multiple functions simultaneously. So the sound quality, or to use the technical term, the bit rate, is much, much better in the newer technology instruments. But they also use techniques such as background noise suppression and multiple microphones. And the purpose of the multiple microphones is to focus the signal of interest, in most cases speech, much more focused to the hearing aid and to reduce the background noise by using this directional microphone technology. It's sort of similar to the technology that's used on Sunday afternoon football, where in a stadium of 50,000 people, you can hear the audibles out in the field because mm-hmm. the microphone technology is so good now.
So let's put it in a hearing aid.
There's lots of technology. The device that you specifically were talking about, there's a number of ancillary devices that can be connected to the hearing aid through wireless technology. And he probably had a remote microphone that was wirelessly communicating to his hearing aids, and by moving that microphone closer to the speaker, the what we call signal to noise ratio, the speech to background noise ratio, is improved, so the comprehension is improved.
It did help him. I think he has since moved on from using that now, but at any rate, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Ken Henry. He's an audiologist and he's the director of the Professional Hearing Services in Falls Church. They also do balance and what other issues you deal? You have another center that you have.
Well,
there.
That's the Dizziness and Balance Center.
Dizziness and Balance. We'll touch on that a little bit because that's all affected in your. It's all related to your ear. But going back to the devices, so what you're telling me is that there has been a significant change in the way hearing aids produce sound and screen out noises, probably over the last few years.
Indeed. And in fact, now the more modern technology such as one that was developed by Widex, there's wireless technology so that the hearing aid on the right ear can talk to the hearing aid on the left ear. So there is communication in terms of information and data from ear to ear, as well as to other devices, some of these devices that you mentioned.
That is incredible, isn't it?
Indeed.
These little bitty devices can do this.
And they have also gotten significantly smaller. They're very, very small and very, very sophisticated, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, now, what about cost? And how do people pay for this? Because at least people that I know have complained about the expense. And, of course, I can understand because of the technology. But do insurance companies pay for? Will they pay for examinations? Will they pay for the devices? What's the range of responses from insurance companies?
Okay, I'll answer that part, the insurance part, last, because that's the part I like the least.
But, okay.
A very, very good quality hearing aid is going to cost a couple of thousand dollars. But getting back to the lead-in point about the economic consequences of hearing loss in the workplace, hearing aids actually mitigate that average of $12,000 a year in lost income as a result of being undervalued by a given employer. So from the standpoint of value, it's very, very good. Excuse me. The average life expectancy of a hearing aid is about 5 years. So again, we're talking about less than $1,000 a year if you prorate that out based on the life expectancy of a hearing aid.
Actually, less than 500 if it's around 2,000.
Well, if it's a binaural or bilateral pair, that's going to be between $4,000 and $6,000.
Okay.
So well, yes, they are expensive, but in terms of A, their benefit, and B, their economic benefit in the workplace, then it's very, very, very cost effective. One has to remember that hearing loss is not something that is just isolated to older individuals. In fact, about 40% of the 25 million people that have hearing loss are either school age or in the workforce. So we're talking about a number of people that are still gainfully employed that have significant hearing loss.
And now, let's go back to some of the causes. And we'll talk about insurance. Well, insurance may or may not pay for it. I mean, I guess that's kind of the answer, isn't it?
That's the long and the short of it, yes.
Right. Okay. Let's go back to the causes, because now we see our young people with earplugs and music devices that they're listening to, who knows what level of sound. Sometimes you can be on an airplane and hear people sitting next to you, you can hear their devices even though they have earplugs on. So, I mean, that says to me that that's got to be awfully loud. Is this a major contributor to young people getting earlier and earlier hearing loss?
Well, the research is starting to suggest that the use of personal listening devices and being exposed to great amounts of social noise, environmental noise, noise in the workplace, social noise, going to concerts, recreational noise by using power sports and firearms and those kinds of things. The demographics suggest that there's a younger and younger population. The other aspect of that is we definitely are seeing a younger population in the clinics because people are much more conscientious about their health. So we're seeing younger and younger people come into the office to actually seek some assistance. Medically or through the use of a hearing aid.
So part of the advice to younger people is to protect your hearing, because it may not always be with you, and it is something that's so essential to your whole life. I mean, your personal relationships can suffer greatly from it if you can't hear. And not to mention that, but what does that do to driving? Can people drive who have a hearing loss and no way of correcting it?
Well, surely indeed that could affect driving. For the most part, hearing loss, severe hearing loss, would only be problematic in those instances, but certainly is problematic in an individual's safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies to more moderate hearing loss as well. So the issue of safety is certainly another benefit in addition to the other benefits that we talked about with the hearing loss. The big thing that we need to remember is that we're talking about quality of life issues with hearing aids. And we're not just talking about the acoustic quality of life, but we're talking about things like better social intervention or better social interaction, better communication with family members, less of a perception of the person being withdrawn. With significant hearing loss and with aging, there is evidence that social isolation leads to actually dementia. Recent study done by Johns Hopkins actually showed a very strong connection between significant hearing loss and cognitive impairment and dementia. So this runs the spectrum from very mild with milder consequences to severe hearing loss with some very significant consequences that are not just hearing related but lifestyle related.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell this from people who have hearing problems. Sometimes they're reluctant to go out to dinner, for example, because they can't hear. Or they want to go someplace in a quieter environment because they cannot distinguish what people are saying if it's a party, for example. So I can see how all of those things could be so crucial in a person's interaction with others, interaction with your fellow employees and your employer. So it does cut across everything, doesn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Ken Henry. He's an audiologist and director of the Professional Hearing Services in Falls Church. Now, let's talk about the devices themselves. And as you've said, the technology has gotten to be such that there's tremendous improvements. They're tiny. They do all kinds of fantastic things. Let's suppose that someone gets a device and it totally does not help them. What kind of recourse do you have?
Well, let me back up and just briefly go through the process.
Okay.
Once we're done an assessment, we can get an idea of actually the benefit and what the prognosis is. So we're able to give an initial estimate as to whether the prognosis is going to be good or questionable. Regardless,
you mean in terms of whether or not they're going to benefit?
Yes, of a hearing aid based on the studies that we do. And this goes back to what I was talking about the number of the amount of distortion of speech as a consequence of the inner ear damage. That prognosis leads to how successful certainly they're going to be with the hearing instrument. What we do is we recommend a hearing instrument, and whether it is somebody with a good prognosis or a poor prognosis, we actually recommend that with telling the consumer that they have a 30-day or a 60-day ability to return the device so that there is no worry about, gee, did I just invest in something that's mm-hmm. not going to work
oh,
for
that's
me.
Awesome. That would be, because that gives people time to actually try it out. Now, when you do that, are you taking a hit on it, or are you able to recycle the device and use it again?
Well, you can't recycle it per se, but the manufacturers understand that hearing loss is something that is very difficult to correct in some circumstances. So the hearing instrument manufacturers actually provide us with the ability to do that, plus that it's also regulated by some state regulations as well.
Mm-hmm.
But once that's done, in addition to providing the consumer with the ability to return the device, then we also do objective testing to actually say or determine objectively, gee, Mrs. Jones, I think this works very well for you, or this is not working very well for you, or we need to make some changes either mm-hmm. to the programming of this instrument or try a different instrument. So it's a very dynamic process. It's not a process where you come in and you get hearing aid X, Y, Z, and you walk out the door and that's it. That's
it's not an instant solution. It's something that you work with the consumer, the patient, over time.
So it's not just technology. Again, these devices are extremely flexible and programmable. It's not just the technology, but it's the human factor, the mm-hmm. interaction, mm-hmm. and if there are specific problems, most of the time we can address those pretty effectively with either software or hardware manipulations.
What kind of warranty do these devices carry?
Depends on the manufacturer, but typically a good warranty would be a 2-year warranty. The devices now come even with loss coverage. So in addition to there being a warranty on the manufacturer's device, there's also loss coverage built into the cost of the instrument. So if the device were to be lost, then it would be replaced. Interestingly enough, some of the new technology actually allows, it's called a partner check, where if one falls off the ear, the other one knows it and will tell you that you need to find the hearing aid.
Getting just way too smart.
Well, they also talk to you as well. So it's now hearing aids actually talk to you, and we can select any number of languages and whether you want a female to talk to you through the hearing aid or whether you want a male to talk
to
you.
And what would they say to you?
Things like that the hearing aid is ready, or that you've entered into a music program, or you've entered into a comfort program. So no, it doesn't give you, it doesn't carry on a conversation.
Nothings in my ear.
No soft nothings. But it's an indication of how the technology is progressing, certainly.
My gracious. I mean, this has just been like an upward climb, hasn't it, in terms of developments and new things in hearing instruments. So,
well, again, it's just like the computer industry is chip technology improves.
Yeah.
Those
yeah.
technologies also carry over into what we do, because virtually modern-day hearing aids now are a number of chips and a microphone and a loudspeaker.
And you talk about the wireless technology. Is most of this wireless? Is it, do you
most
have,
of, most
I
of
mean,
the...
people used to wear a thing in their shirt or on their jacket and things over your ears. And now what do you see now? What do they look like?
The same kinds of things. Actually, the wireless technology that I was referring to, that's used by Widex, is it uses a better technology than Bluetooth, but you have a peripheral device that connects to your phone by conventional Bluetooth, and then the device converts that signal to a much higher frequency wireless signal and sends it to your hearing aids. And in fact, we've had a great deal of success with that, because folks now can answer the phone not just in one ear, but in both ears through the hearing aid,
of
their cell phone. Indeed.
That really is incredible. Do most people require hearing aids in both ears, or is it an individual thing? Or
again, it depends on the hearing loss and whether the hearing loss is unilateral in one ear or bilateral in two ears. But the vast majority of folks, in order to get the maximum benefit of binaural hearing, there's a reason why we were built with two ears in the first place, so we take advantage of that binaural effect.
Okay, and now what we haven't really touched on is the very severe loss of hearing or total loss of hearing, and of course you're not really able to deal with that with hearing aids, and that we had just mentioned that the cochlear implants is one option for people. Are there other options now for people who have total hearing loss?
With total hearing loss, obviously a hearing aid isn't going to help. It's that category where there is only a marginal amount of hearing loss left, and the medical protocol for that is you try a hearing aid first, and if that doesn't work, then the next step might be something like a cochlear implant. A cochlear implant is not, I might add, a hearing aid, but the use of electrical stimulation to the hair cells of the inner ear. So it does not approximate what you otherwise would hear through a hearing aid in terms of...
But it does enable you to understand sounds. I guess you kind of have to rewire your brain to do that.
Indeed. And in fact, for somebody who's profoundly deaf, the cochlear implants have been a profound benefit and a great technology as well.
Well, thank you so much for introducing us to the wonderful things that are happening to help our aging population, as well as our younger population, if they're losing their hearing because of some of their lifestyle activities. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here in Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Dr. Ken Henry, an audiologist and director of the Professional Hearing Services in Falls Church. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.